Tri-State Space Program, this is the second part of my conversation with Zach Evans and Jesse Reininger. They're both local musicians and local journalists. Jesse and I will be releasing video projects in 2016. I'll announce them and definitely give out more details as they come to fruition. Zach's band Trashloaf has begun playing shows. I'll put their Facebook URL in the description. Thanks for listening. Dude, one thing that I wanted to get to was one time after practice, some of the members of the Jangle Sheep stuck around and we talked about, we didn't record this, but we talked about space and time, and there's one portion of it where it was someone explaining it who, it had been explained to him before, but he couldn't quite get it, and he said something about there was 11 dimensions, obviously. Height and width, I guess, would be one and two, I guess. Because then three is space, is like the third dimension of depth. Yeah. And then fourth is time.
Right.
The fourth dimension. So, but you can't have space without time, because then it's just space and it's not moving or doing anything. And then you can't have time without space, because then it doesn't have anything to control. So, you know?
I've read, like,
it's weird.
Quantum physics or some advanced calculus, like, the way they can prove these equations is by just, they add another dimension.
Yeah.
Like, in their, really? In their a logarithm or equation they've created, they just compensate by saying, okay, well, we got another dimension here, so this is how that explains this. I wish I could get more into it, but I'm a words guy.
Not well versed. Yeah.
But it struck me as just interesting. I saw that on Reddit, I think. I don't know how true it could be, but, you know.
That's cool, though.
Yeah.
That's, like, deep. That's where I want to kind of get to with this, like, just this podcast in general. It's just to talk about a lot of just deep shit that people don't...
Chair-side
people might like riding around and listening to. Yeah, yeah. We're all musicians, though, and we've all thought about things really...
Really, people attribute, like, philosophy and that kind of thing to people with staunchy degrees and mustaches and shit, you know? But, I don't know, man. I feel like it's our duty as a species, you know, to think about that kind of thing, and
right.
You know,
we have brains, just fucking use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. The one of the big, I don't know, not to get back to negative news events or anything, but the thing that I just don't, it's a weird juxtaposition to think about. You know, guys like us, well, women that are similar to us in mindset as well. I'm not ruling them out, obviously. We all think about things like this, like the universe, and we try to conceptualize the galaxy, you know, and everything, right. and just crazy out there shit, you know, and then down the road, some, like, cop is beating the shit out of someone, and, like, somewhere else, there's a fucking house fire, and somewhere else, like, we're consistently reminded of it, as journalists especially.
Yeah.
That's, like, it's right in our face all the time, and we kind of hit on it earlier that it's just all about kind of tragedy. Like, I had to cover a cabin fire a little while back with my job, and I had to talk to the people who owned the cabin, and it sucked. It was like, you know, it was sad. I'm sure you do that
Zach. I've done some heavy shit, man. Yeah, I've talked to murder
victims.
What's
some heavy stuff?
Probably the heaviest thing that ever happened. There was this apartment fire on Franklin Street, and it was an intentionally set fire. The guy's been charged, convicted.
Ugh.
And there was an entire family. There was two, like, four-year-old girls, an old man,
oh my God.
A woman, and four people got killed. So I get there. This is probably a minute and a half from the Courier building. So I get there the same time as the first ambulance does. And there's already one fire truck there. And one cop's there. And it's fucking chaos, man. We've got people screaming. And literally, across the street from me, there's four people just, like, roasting to death. You know, not to be crass about it, but that's what's happening. Like, and these are people processing at the same time as I'm processing, I guess. And the public safety people were processing. That was probably the heaviest thing I've had to cover hands on.
Wow. Yeah.
How did the guy said it? How did he get caught? Was he like still fleeing the scene whenever they arrived? Or?
It was. He was an idiot, of course. Obviously, somebody has the capacity to do this. But, yeah. Obviously. He was basically a boyfriend of this woman, and they got in an argument. And as he's leaving, he like lights a jacket on fire. Like, I guess he just to punish them. I don't think he really fully realized maybe
that I'm going to burn these people down. Yeah.
But it did. I mean, it's the way that it was just one of those old homes split into apartments, so just the way where he said it was in a hallway and they had no other escape. I mean, that was their exit, was that one stairwell. Mm. And so he's leaving. And as he's leaving, there's obviously the fire going. This black guy at a corner sees it, and the guy's crossing his way, and he's like, "What happened?" And he's like, "I set that." And he kept walking.
Oh.
Like, admitted to it right away. So the cops got him, I think, within a few blocks.
Yeah.
Very easy description. They've dealt with him before. This was not somebody that they hadn't dealt with before.
That's insane, man.
He killed a 3-year-old girl, 76-year-old man, 28-year-old woman, and then somebody else. I can't recall who.
Holy shit.
Or maybe it was just three. Maybe it's just the three. Mm. And everybody, there's injuries. I mean, it's insane, man. It's insane. Wow.
Yeah.
That's just part of the job, you know?
Well, luckily there was no one in that cabin.
Yeah.
I didn't have to see anything like that, but the lady was crying. The lady who owned it was crying.
Right.
And the guy just didn't have much to say, but I had to talk to him. And I took some really badass pictures of that cabin fire, though. No one was hurt, so I was like, sure. I mean, I gotta up my fucking photography skills right now.
Is this a nighttime thing?
I realize I'm... Or? Yeah. What? Oh, no, it was daytime. Daytime.
Okay. Yeah.
I realize I'm capitalizing on someone's tragedy, but well, I'm the fucking news person. That's what you do.
And that just calls back, you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, about people, like, you're doing your job, you know, and you're doing it because, I mean, you're doing it to show other people and to, I mean, kind of immortalize it, I guess, in a way, you know, and, but...
Keep a record
but then,
of shit that happens.
I mean, so. you see, like, older movies, like Inherit the Wind, man, the journalist that comes to town to, you know, that movie is about the Skokes Monkey Trial, you know, and everything And that journalist comes to town to hire a big Chicago lawyer to defend this small town teacher, you know, and everyone hates him, and he's, his lines, as Gene Kelly played him, and he played him fabulously.
That was a great movie, I've seen
it. Oh, yeah, and he's just, he's so cynical, sarcastic, and everything, and that idea, that is what embodies what people think of when they, you know, think of journalists. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, taking pictures of a house burning down, or ambulance chasers, that kind of thing, you know, I mean, that's what you're considered, I mean, that's...
I kind of felt... Have you seen the movie Nightcrawler yet?
Yeah.
Oh, goddamn. I'm so glad you guys have seen that. What a great movie. Oh, it's so suspenseful.
Mm, like, the whole car ride home, I mean, and just with the going to school for it and working at it, it hit so close to home, you know,
right.
Obviously.
Yeah, right. And did you see it in theaters?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't.
Saw it with Sydney in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw home.
And I saw it with Sydney in theaters, dude, and I was like...
Oh, my God, when
edge,
he's going
like,
into the
literally,
house.
Literally on... Oh, dude.
When he goes into the house.
Whenever he is sitting outside of that restaurant waiting for that shit to go down, I'm just like... No. On the whole car ride home, like, seriously, for like days after, I was just like...
thinking about
struck.
It. I thought about it, too. I need to watch it again. When he moves the body... No. Spoiler alerts, by the way. But, yeah.
Maybe I haven't seen it. You better fucking see it. I
yeah,
mean,
you need
on.
To
it's
see
been
it.
Out for a while now.
But it, when he... Spoiler alert. When he moves the body... and just skip 15 seconds. When he moves the body, that part just fucking blew my mind. Because he goes up, kind of frames it, and he's like... Nah, and he runs down and he pulls the body out where the headlights were shining in the
and
headlights.
The music that's going on with it, how it's so triumphant and so like, you
beautiful
know, and you feel everything with him, man. Like how and his and Jake Gyllenhaal's performance.
Great. He's such a weirdo.
Like, and like his whenever he finally gets that shot and you feel that with him as an audience member, it was just executed so well.
I love
you know?
It. Yeah, it's such a great movie about independent journalism. Really, in a way, it
that's
is.
What it is. Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's about you know he just went out at night with a police scanner and made a living.
Yeah.
In that movie, like that's fucking amazing. That you could actually do that in America.
You could. And
that's
and,
how fucked up our media
true.
Is.
And you know
like,
what's really, I mean, and that's really where the culture used to be as far as journalism. I mean, there used to be so many more freelancers, I feel like, than there are today. I mean, yeah, you can do, if you count, like, online news sources and everything like that, sure, you know, you have that kind of, those contributors and everything like that. Yeah,
but they're not trained or
executed in the but I feel like just, it was more widely accepted, you know, and now it's kind of, you know, you have your major media outlets and everything, and you have employees and everything, and it's like, I don't know, man, it's so weird, like you were saying, like, that someone could get away with that, and because they're not, you know, they have no one to answer to or anything, right. Really, you know?
They don't. I mean, it's Bill Paxton was in that movie as well.
Yeah.
He was a great choice. Rene Russo was in it. She was a great choice. They had some, like, good older established actors in it, like, good picks, I thought.
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal, obviously very established, and plays a weirdo pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Donnie Darko, you know, like, even if, well, I don't want to say this, but I will, Brokeback Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't play a weirdo, but he plays different parts so well in every, you know, he plays a Southern American in that movie really well. In, right? Isn't it set in the South?
Yeah. Well,
Brokeback Mountain.
People that went through
Appalachia.
I think it's Wyoming, actually.
Mentally
is it Wyoming?
I'm pretty people. Sure.
Yeah. I haven't. I think I saw it. If I saw it once, I saw it once. That's it, you know. I know I've seen parts of it.
I mean, he plays, like, mentally anguished people really well.
Does.
And, you know, just
does.
Like as an actor, someone who's done acting a little bit, you know, those are my favorite roles to play. That was the first one I did at USI was the Pillow Man, you know.
Hmm.
And that was, you know, crazy. And then, I don't know, it's just, those are the roles that you go for because you can just let go, let loose,
okay,
and just,
yeah.
It's a way to really deal with your own problems and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Much like music, like we were talking about, you know, it's an escape and everything, you know? I mean, you know, I don't want to be Jesse anymore. I can go be Nick Carraway or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And you were.
But, you know,
played it, like, really well. I saw that one. That was really good. And I saw the DVD of you. You were the preacher. And, what was that called?
Book of Days.
Yeah. That was good, too. You had a lot of cool... Like, the prayer you gave was really cool. Like, the prayer you did. It was like, you were so convincing. And that's what's funny to me is, like, I know that you don't believe any of that. Like, if you were religious and you were doing that, it would be weird. But since you're not, you can play a shitty preacher really well.
I don't know,
like,
man.
A backwards preacher is what I mean by shitty.
Mean,
you
Kevin,
played it well.
Kevin, the director, he directed Gatsby too, and he knew me and from talking to me and everything, doing that show together. And then whenever he was casting that Book of Days or whatever, he was like, definitely, he wanted to see what, you know, he was like, I wanted to challenge you. I wanted you to play someone totally different from who you are. And so I just really what I wanted to embody was, have you seen the movie There Will Be Blood? Daniel Day-Lewis. I wanted to play Eli, you know, the young preacher in that. That was what I was trying to embody.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, Paul Dano, fucking, how can you... But, you know, still, I...
Totally underrated, by the
way. Oh, he absolutely is. Have you seen Being Flynn?
I haven't.
That one, you should see that. He is the lead in that movie. And Robert De Niro's in it. Plays his father.
Really?
It's really good. Yeah, the writers and everything. And you should definitely check that movie out. But,
Yeah, that the part you played in that movie was so, or in the movie, that play was the preacher was crazy. I haven't seen you in Macbeth yet. You played Malcolm, right?
Yeah.
So I haven't seen you in Macbeth
yet. You know
yet,
Macbeth.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, that part you played in the one that I have, Nick Carraway was fucking awesome. That's like, that's really cool that you got that part. That really says something.
What?
like it. Says something that you got, like, that really good part, like, the top part.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Gatsby, really. I mean, I feel like it's
kind
of
I went to Gatsby.
Yeah, it's really...
If that's why you were... I awkwardly changed, like,
no,
the play
no,
I was talking about.
I just meant that, like, I don't know,
I thought
a
you
lot
killed
of people really
man.
Consider Jay Gatsby to be the thing, you know? I'm just kind of, like, I'm just kind of the tour
you're
guy
the narrator,
to Gatsby's world,
yeah, but
you
you're
know?
The narrator.
I, like,
you tell the story.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm more of just, like, a chauffeur through Gatsby's world, just kind of bringing the audience along. That's what, you know, and... I think really I kind of look the physical part for Nick Carraway, you know, and everything. But I don't know. I like, Matthew Effinger played Gatsby, and he, I mean, just was Gatsby. He just embodied him.
He was good.
He's tall, he was good. Handsome guy, really kind, and but also, I mean, just the way he, I don't know, he... Yeah, he did
a good job, man. He did. And you did a really good job, too, like, setting everything up and, like, and just... That's a... I don't know. That's a really good... I like the story of that, and this set in the 20s. 20s are cool. I've never seen the movie, the newish movie with Jay-Z doing the soundtrack and Leonardo DiCaprio. I haven't seen it. I've heard it's okay, but...
I saw that. That was all right. I mean, I had already seen them, but I felt, like, obligated to kind of watch both of them, you know? Yeah, and then I read the book a couple of times, and then obviously read the script over and over again.
But
one thing that I liked, and we kind of... It was kind of like the new movie where they use a lot of Jay-Z or, like, just modern music. We used modern music in it, but it was, like... It was, like, modern takes on classic, like, swing or 1920s ragtime type stuff.
Cool.
You know, and, like, Postmodern Jukebox, you know, that band, they do a lot of covers like that, especially that. I mean, that's their style, and we used a lot of their type of songs. And Kevin, the director, it was his idea to do this. And, like, any time that I was drunk, because the audience is basically seeing the whole thing through my eyes, you know, and any time that I was drinking... he would use modern type music, but whenever I was sober and like in the city, he would use like actual like clips from the like music back then, you know. So, but anytime I got drunk, modern type style of that type music would kick in, and
that's an interesting choice.
So, how do you? I'm not an actor. I've never done acting really. I did some plays in middle school, but like since you're a musician and an actor, what's the difference in between preparing for a performance for either, or is it very similar, or is it? Is it just completely different kind of art forms?
It I don't know. I mean, it's like anything. It has similarities, you know. I mean, you get all those same nerves and everything, and you have to build yourself up and work into it, you know. I mean, you can't just go play a show cold or anything, just like you can't go act in a play cold. You can't just, you know, just kind of walk in after, I mean, knowing the script and just walk in and just be like, all right, here, I'm going to do this, you know. And, I don't know. Yeah, it's I feel like the process, I mean... The process is very similar. I mean, you work at it for months beforehand. You build your set list, or you memorize your script. You do that, and you all work up and you work up to it. And it's just I don't know. It's a difference, I guess, is just that you really. I feel like whenever you get ready to play music, you really reach inside of yourself and you like try to you know you're being yourself, almost like trying to pour what is in you and what you're hearing in your head out to everyone else. And I guess you do that in a way with acting. Sometimes what I do is, you know, reach into things that have happened to me or things I've gone through and experiences. But at the same time, you are distancing yourself, like, from yourself, you know, like not becoming you. It's totally, it's different, you know.
I know what you're saying. I can see what you're, I can conceptualize it in my brain, like what you're saying. I've done like barely any acting. Actually, Jesse and I are in these videos that like pretty much like a weird group of people I've known throughout like a different like group of people like each from a different time in my life. Like we all like met up and made some videos, and we probably have about 20 minutes of footage that we're gonna put on YouTube, and it's called Kosher Carl and Pure Pete.
It's crazy
and
how
I wear like a pig mask, and like just the pig around my eyes and my nose as a snout, and then Zach, this other dude that I worked with at Alvey's, he's wearing a cow mask, like a little kid cow mask.
Okay.
And we're serial killers, and but it's kind of the right now it's just kind of this weird video about us, and then we pick up a member. In a weird way, and I don't want to give it away because it's kind of cool. And then Jesse is a drunk, and there's like a montage of all this, like basically Jesse's day, a day in the life of you know, this
homeless,
bum.
Drunk.
Yeah, he's got a paper bag with a bottle in it, and he like it's just a bunch of weird shit that happens. And then
told you I was pissing on the wall, and you could hear it crackling.
Yeah. Earlier, okay. Before the podcast day, we talked about that. And then what else? Like there's then we train Nate. Haynes, who's been on the podcast, he is our trainee. He's the new member, and we meet through these weird circumstances, and then we start training him, and then Jesse's montage comes up in a kind of a weird place, and you don't get it until the end whenever we meet up.
Okay.
And which I just gave that away, but you know, who's going to listen to this and then watch the video in a month? But anyway,
I'm sure you got a handful of like hardcore fans.
Watch it, yeah.
I'm sure.
I looked and it was like RSS feed views. I had 1,400 some odd, like
really?
A couple weeks ago. Fantastic. That means that 1,400 different times someone had my podcast on their phone. Hmm. That's what that means. That means they clicked on it and it was the only thing on their phone for that long, for like 1,400 people.
That's crazy.
And for me, it's probably been like 20. So we can say like 1,380 is like everyone else. So it's kind of becoming a somewhat of a thing, hopefully, in the community.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping it you know, I'm going to start putting
in flyers. And when you get big, I'm gonna hit you up for that co-host spot, you know?
Right? When I have a talk show? No. I don't think I'll ever have an actual talk show. I'll do a podcast, though. I've thought about adding the video element, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just so...
Like, just have a video camera set up in
here.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, probably two. Probably so I can pan, or I can, you know, go back and forth.
Yeah.
Have, like, a little keyboard
really cool.
that
it's
I can change.
A good way to reach a different audience. You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
it is,
you know,
yeah.
Some people don't like to listen to podcasts.
Put it on YouTube, yeah. You know?
And, you know, like, and this is totally off, but, like, I watched the original Quirks, the Blu-ray edition when they had all these special features, and they had commentary from, like, 2012 or 13 or something, and they had done that. They had actually, and it was the first time I had seen that, they had filmed the commentary, and you could do it a little picture-in-picture, like, see them filming, like, talking to each other as the movie's rolling.
Cool.
And I thought that was so awesome, you know. I mean, I love watching listening to commentary, you know. And
yeah.
I'm a special features junkie, you know.
I like it too sometimes.
Yeah, that's what
sometimes.
I hate about Netflix is all that stuff's God, you know.
Oh, oh yeah, right.
I know.
They should put that out with the movie.
Yeah.
They should put it out with the movie.
I think the studios intentionally don't let the special features get shown because that gives an incentive for people to buy the DVD.
Right.
But still, I think at least Netflix should do that for their stuff, you know. Because they're starting to produce movies, even though they're Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah. Really, they produce a lot of...
Is Ridiculous 6 just a play on The Hateful Eight?
It has to be, right? I mean...
I would imagine it is.
What?
The Ridiculous 6 is a Netflix
Sandler
movie.
Adam Sandler has
this
new movie called...
It's a Netflix movie.
Ridiculous 6. Netflix, produced by Netflix. Ridiculous 6. It's basically a team Western. It's got like Terry Crews and... I'm sure Rob Schneider's in it, and
mm-hmm.
I think Luke Wilson, of all people, is in it,
wow.
Which is an interesting get, but...
yeah, that is.
But it looks like a total riff on Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight, which is coming out.
Yeah, the same time, pretty much.
Yeah.
Really?
But that's like the other medium is Netflix, and they're coming out with a spoof movie at the same time, which is weird.
They have been producing a lot of stand-up specials.
Oh, like, fuck yeah. Dimitri Martin
awesome.
Has one.
Jim Jefferies, really a modern comedian I really like, you know.
Bill Burr is on Netflix.
And,
he's got his own animated series coming out.
And now, and whenever Legit, Jim Jefferies' show he had on FX, Legit got canceled, they bought it up as well on there.
Did they really?
Yeah, it's on there. And I don't know, he is, like, most of the comedians I really like
are all... new episodes?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Oh.
Fantastic.
Well, that would be cool if they did that. If they just like, basically waited until someone got canceled, and then they were like, wait, we'll just pick that show up.
We'll take it from you.
We'll buy it from the other company. We'll buy the rights to it and just make it on our network.
And actually, that's what happened with House of Cards, right?
Oh, right?
They had that... it was going to be on a network, I think HBO or something like that.
HBO.
And they turned it down at the last minute. I guess they didn't want it or something. And so Netflix bought the shit out of it. And it's
been a hit.
Probably
one
of the worst decisions HBO's ever made.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big hit.
Oh, yeah.
Because that really changed the tide for Netflix. I mean, in terms of quality content.
Uh-huh. I mean, because just something like, something that dramatic and that... with actors that big and just all of that stuff, all those factors, and at a time where it was kind of starting to grow, and then boom.
Yeah.
I mean, I know whenever they released that show on there, my grandfather and I, like, my grandfather is so not no technology, you know. Uh-huh. But like, I had my PlayStation. I would come home and he'd have it on there, like Netflixing it up, you know, watching House of Cards.
That's cool.
Yeah, he was using
the PS3 controller. Right? Yeah. That's crazy.
I walk in, I see him, and I'm like, and then I look at the screen, and it's like, oh, okay, Netflix. But still, I mean, yeah.
I got my dad to play Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, Need for Speed 3 Hot Pursuit on PlayStation 1 with me, because he can control gas and brake and turning. You know, he can do that, but he can't do like anything real technical, like any shooting. He can't really do shooting games. Right. Like Twisted Metal, he was okay at Twisted Metal 2. Yeah. He was all right, but once I brought 3 in, he was like, no, I can't handle it. It's too much.
Yeah, once you get down to like that double stick movement type, you know, moving forward and looking, exactly, you know. Yeah. That's even like some like class, like my girlfriend, Sydney, she was a huge gamer when she was younger, played like Star Fox and Spyro and all that kind of stuff. And I tried to get her to play, the Elder Scrolls or something, you know, something I know that she would like. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's just so, you know, that thing. It takes so much getting used to, you know.
We've been primed a lot?
Oh, yeah. We've been primed our entire lives to to these things, you know. Mm-hmm. It's our brains have been rewired to think in thumbs and fingers. Yeah. Or mostly thumbs, I guess. I've been playing games my entire life.
Yeah, you still play? You have a
a PlayStation 4 now. My girlfriend blessed me with one. So.
I just got one. I got one. I had to beat some old lady down at Black Friday to get it, but I got that, and I actually just today I got Fallout 4 and this Until Dawn, that horror game, and I'm excited. That's what I'm doing when I get home.
PlayStation guy.
I'm keeping you from it right now with this podcast.
PS1, PS2, PS3, had them all.
So many classic games.
Yeah, I started out Nintendo, obviously, like Super Nintendo, and then, I would beat high school kids' ass on Super Nintendo when I was like 4 years old.
God damn it.
That was a good idea.
It bounced out of the trash can, too. God damn it.
Yeah, I don't know. I was an Xbox person whenever the Xbox came out, and I was loyal to that for a long time. And then PS3, man, free online and just better exclusive games.
So you were a bitch for a while.
The Last of Us in particular, and then like Heavy Rain and certain games that were exclusive. PlayStation does just have the best exclusive games.
Metal Gear Solid?
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude.
Fucking Metal Gear Solid, dude. Yeah. And Grand Theft Auto started out as a PlayStation game only. Like,
yeah, it did.
And then Xbox was like, this is too good. We got to get in on this.
Halo
cash.
Can suck a dick, dude. Like, I don't know.
I don't like Halo. Yeah, I've never really been a big fan of Halo.
I mean, I was when I was, you know, younger, but then I just grew out of it. Once I really played the first, the Morrowind.
Once you lost your virginity.
Once I lost my RPG virginity, I was like, first person shooters.
I just mean your regular virginity.
Like, Call of Duty and Halo first person shooters in general can all go to hell. Like,
Metal Gear Solid's badass, dude, because for the PlayStation 2 games, you could have either. You could have first-person shooter, or you could be third-person.
Right. I'm more of a third-person.
Yeah, I like third-person.
I love third-person action games. I've been playing Arkham Knight, finished it up, most of the DLC by now, but I'm a big Batman fanatic, so you really become fucking, like, the Dark Knight.
In your brain, like...
Yeah.
We're at that point now where you really are just fully submerged, almost. I mean, it's just going to get crazier with, you know, virtual reality.
Oh, my God,
like
I know.
That.
I think half the reason that I've kept my hair long as an adult is because once I became a man, I wanted to be as much like Solid Snake as I possibly could. And I need to start wearing a bandana. Eye patch and a bandana.
Hey, man, I got a hot spoon. You want
to... Well, Solid Snake has both his eyes. It's Big Boss that has... Right. But I could be Big Boss when I'm older. When I'm old, throw that eye patch on me and be Big Boss.
Why not?
For a moment, I confused it with Escape from New York and L.A.
Oh,
Based it on Snake Plissken.
Mm-hmm.
Plitzken. Is it Plissken?
I think there's a... Yeah.
It's Plissken, I think. There's a Snake Plissken. Yeah. But anyway, Snake... Yeah, that... They based it off Kurt Russell's character in that movie.
I really, like... I don't know. I do like third person, you know. I like having the option to switch between them, you know. But
that's nice.
Really, man, whenever, like, RPGs, like, I mean, Bethesda is just what I've been raised on. I know there are other RPGs that I really would like, but, Yeah, I feel like I get so much more submerged whenever do it that way. Yeah, I mean, especially if it's, even if it's plot heavy and you can still, but then I play like other third person games like Beyond Two Souls, that had, and that's where it's going too. Like, there are bigger actors that are doing it and they do like that, that really detailed mocap kind of stuff. And, and it's just, and really what the kind of games I like, the reason I got Until Dawn is just decision based and it affects the whole outcome of the story and everything like that.
Oh, sure.
Really heavy plots, you know, and that's man, I said earlier, life is a video game would be a ridiculous notion, but at the same time, what if this is just a really advanced video game, man, that we're all just playing in the future, and we're all fat and lazy, wow, man.
No, like, I think I seriously did keep my hair long, partly because of Solid Snake. And it's because it's like,
cool,
I wanted to be a skateboarder because of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And I want, you know, it fuels your life somewhat. Like, the fantasy of the video game, think, oh, maybe this is as easy as pushing triangle, square, circle. Like, you know, but it's not. And ends up being, isn't it funny how we have those archaic symbols as our video game symbols, even the letters, if you think about it, are just archaic, like X especially.
A-B-X-Y.
Like, yeah, X is like a big one. Like, that's obviously been around a long time.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
Like, and now it's on controllers. And that's fucking crazy, man. Mm-hmm. And X is on both systems.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's an X on PlayStation and an X on Xbox. It's called Xbox. Like, goddamn. It's just something. Video games, we basically projected ourselves into, into as humans, and it's like, we're living out our fantasies on it. Grand Theft Auto is like, we're living out our fantasy of just running into people on the road and shooting people.
Yeah.
Just like, that's a fantasy you have in your day to day, like, God, fuck you, you cunt. Yeah. Like, the other day,
rip a motherfucker out of their car.
I gotta tell this story. Yeah, hopefully I tell it well. Okay. I pull up to the McDonald's parking lot, or the McDonald's drive-thru in Newburgh, and there's like three cars before I can get to a speaker. And the car in front of me is this black minivan. It's like a newer minivan, probably 2013 Toyota or something. And it's just sitting there. It's got, I can see the mom and the kids, and the Grinch is on the TV screen in the back seat of the car. And I'm just sitting there waiting, smoking a cigarette or something, and then, you know, it moves pretty well normally, like a McDonald's line moves, and then gets up to, like, the lady, it's her turn to move up to the speaker, and there is plenty of room in front of her. The white car in front of her has moved up enough, but she just sits 5 feet from the speaker with her window up on her fucking cell phone texting. And I'm just sitting there like, I have to get to band practice. Like, I'm on my way to practice.
Mm-hmm.
People are depending upon me to be there. And I'm just sitting there like, are you fucking serious? This cunt is like still just sitting there. And then after maybe a minute and a half, which is a long ass time sitting in the drive through, she scoots up to the window and rolls it down. And then she did the same thing at the actual fucking pickup window. She would not scoot up.
I'm not
there was
quite
like
ready
5 feet
yet. I'm
and she would not scoot up again. Like, God damn, what are you... And she was on her phone again.
Yeah.
It's like, bitch.
And then you gotta go home and kill anyone in Grand Theft Auto that has a cell phone, you know?
Or a minivan.
Beat them with a big black dildo, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That purple dildo in San Andreas.
Yeah, exactly. Over and over again.
Just the double-sided dildo. Just fucking beat the shit out of someone with a double-sided dildo. That's what I feel like doing to that lady.
Uh-huh.
And it's fucked up because she's feeding her kids McDonald's, first of all, which I'm eating McDonald's, so I guess that makes me sound like a hypocrite.
Yeah,
but
you're 20-something.
I'm not giving my kids McDonald's.
Those kids don't have a choice. Those kids have no say in the matter.
Exactly.
Know? Well, they do, because they demand it because they're addicted to it. But
because we force it down them.
Right.
Yeah, we force that salt and MSG and sugar right down their throat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. that's it. I mean, that's what happened to me. I mean, everyone thinks that all that shit is fine until finally science catches up and they're like, hey, actually, this shit's not good for you. Don't eat it. And then, well, it's already ingrained in my brain as a quick option. And Taco Bell's the same way.
Well, I mean,
KFC, all that shit.
And at this point, you almost, you can, but you almost can't even blame the parents because it's how they were raised.
Yeah.
It's where our culture is
weird.
At. it's where our economy is at as well. I mean, it's just our food culture, the way we think about eating and food is just totally changed. I mean, it's just supposed to be like this, instant really quick now. Yeah, right? And just go. And it's not like something that you sit down and enjoy or whatever. It's just, you know, it's fuel is all it is anymore. You
fucking
know?
Scarf it down and go about your day.
And I do it too. We're all guilty of it, you know, but...
That's why I love when my girlfriend or someone makes a meal.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You've made meals for me before. I fucking love that shit, dude. That's just, like, such an occasion.
I love you, so. I love cooking. You know, I love the process of cooking. But you know what's so funny is, like, that by the time I get done with it, sometimes I'm just like, I don't really want to eat this now, you know? and it's like, let's go get some McDonald's.
Can I get a McDouble?
I'm gonna let this lasagna sit at home, but I don't know, but yeah, it's just the culture that we raise them in, you know, and our economy and everything is where it's at. It's just that you are forced to do it, and you know, I mean, you're not forced to, but it's like it's made so difficult and everything, and really where our work culture is too, you know. Definitely has an impact on it. And I've been, since I started this night shift schedule, I've been doing like I've been ragging on the whole work culture. You know, you always have to blame the whole country, but it's just the way we schedule everything and demand so much of employees and like you have to be there or we'll just fucking, you know, and this mom is trying to go to work and get her kids to school and has it on a budget and everything like that. Of course she's gonna go there, but yeah,
this is in the afternoon. This is like supper. Like she could be home, you know, cooking for them. Like, she could be. I don't know what her schedule is. I don't know what their schedule is. I'm judging, you know, without knowing anything, without having any information. But I think it's just her lackadaisical attitude that contributed to me not, you know, thinking that she probably just brought them there because she's a dumbass. Because she obviously doesn't give a shit about everyone else in the line. If she's texting, texting while driving, which I'm guilty of every so often, and I don't do it very often, but if it's something real fucking, if it's something where I'm going to get, you know, it's not going to be cool if I don't answer immediately, like my boss or something, sometimes I'll do that, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know, I had a point I was going to say, and then I stood up.
Lost the thought.
Yeah.
It's like walking through a doorway.
Right?
Yeah. Just eats it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's a whole new room. That brings it back to the vibe of a room. It can really fuck with
now
it,
I'm standing what you're up, thinking. Like,
I can get easily distracted, too, honestly, man.
Me too,
man. A
lot
of busy activity in here.
Yeah, there is. But whenever you're playing, I think, that's taking so much of your sensory.
Oh, sure.
You know, when you're playing, you have that music just blaring.
Now, with you saying that she was like probably dumb and uneducated and everything, of course. I mean, it's all feeding into it. I mean, it's all like they're, you know, no, like we always try and solve problems in this country. Like we're going to have a war on this. We're going to do this. We're going to fix that, you know, but we're always focused just on one issue at a time. And I mean, everything is affecting each other. Like we're all uneducated. We're poor. Our work culture is such in this country. Where it's 24/7 self service, you know, customer service and everything, and all of these factors are feeding into it. Why this lady has to be in a line at McDonald's with her fucking kids, you know, getting it for the second time today, fifth time this week, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's all feeding into it, you know, and it's just it's so sad where we're going. They actually just threw up a Taco Bell. Where in Ferdinand, where I live, and we only have a Wendy's, a McDonald's, and a Subway, right?
Oh, wow.
So I threw up a Taco Bell, and the line there was like fucking
I bet, dude. Yeah. McDonald's rebuilt.
Yeah.
McDonald's rebuilt until Sony was the same way.
It was exactly the same.
They had an
event. Right across the street
from
it.
Yeah,
I worked right across the parking lot from it, too. So, oh, my God. And like, I would get out and lunch and look at, like, think about going over there, step outside, look at, nope. And then just... Not even worth it. But so there's so many fucking people there, and they were like, oh, it's okay. It's a fucking Taco Bell. It's the same everywhere. Same shitty modern decor artwork thing and everything like that. It's like, yeah, man, I can walk into any Taco Bell anywhere. It's the exact same. Ain't that great?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Like, what? Do you not like?
No, it takes away a city's or a town's cultural identity.
Yeah,
I mean,
you just go back 30 years, and you know, traveling on the road, you get a taste of. every little town and, you know, what's going on here. You get a reflection of what they are. Now you can go there and there's every fucking main strip in America looks the same. Yeah. Arby's, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's.
Right. Walgreens, CVS.
It goes beyond food, of course.
AutoZone, O'Reilly, Advanced.
We have all these Walmart, Home Depot shows on the Food Network of people exploring these small pockets, restaurants, everything for us, but we can't do it. And they try and tell us, but of course they know we're not gonna go.
That's why we watch a show about it.
And exactly.
Guy Fieri to tell me about it.
But that's that's what we push, and we say Main Street's important and everything. But at the same time, all of those same people are selling fucking McDonald's or selling Doritos and shit. Right. You know, and
we're calling it Main Street as a joke,
and it's our fault as a culture.
It's an ironic joke.
We're just as complicit in it as they are.
But, I am for sure. I shop on Amazon, for Christ's sake.
I do too.
How can you not, dude?
Half my Christmas presents so far have been Amazon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know, man. It's just. We probably should. I don't know when this band is going to start, so we should probably begin wrapping it up. Because when they start playing, it's definitely going to be too loud because they're a heavy band. They're really good. They sounded really good the other night. Heard them practice, and it's Crows of Odin, which is a metal band around here. So
into it,
probably a dark, pretty fucking. It is heavy. We only heard a couple songs.
It sounds so familiar.
Their last band was called Vikanthrope. Actually, or the guy in there, his last band.
Okay.
Jason Breeze, he actually works at Guitar Center. I'm name dropping the shit out of him, but I don't care. He'd probably be cool with it. So he's a pretty cool guy. Anyway, so let's bring it back since I've just talked a lot about local music. Let's bring it back to that, like kind of scale it down a little bit. And I just want to get both of your thoughts on, because Zach wrote, I want to get your thoughts on this, Jesse, and then Zach can expand on it. But he had a. I guess you call it a column online. Does it print as well, your column?
It did, yeah. I've stopped doing it now, but yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
It does run the paper.
Well, the first installment, wasn't it from the first one where it said the local music scene is at a precipice?
Yeah.
He thinks it is. And how do you feel about that, Jesse? We've really only been in a cover band, but I know you've been to a lot of shows and stuff, and...
You mean...
how do you feel about... Do you think it's at a precipice?
On the verge of becoming something greater.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I absolutely do think so. And really, the music culture in this area, and, I mean, just in pockets like this, like small southern-type towns, like has always been very important, you know? And I feel like it's gone away, kind of like what we've been talking about with where we've been at as a culture. It's kind of gone away and taken a back seat and everything, but then I at the same time I feel like it has been growing a lot, and they're obviously, I mean, you can't swing a stick in like towns where I'm from or Evansville or anything without hitting a musician, you
Tell
know?
City.
And like it, so I definitely do think, absolutely believe that it's coming, that it's becoming a bigger thing. I mean, that you have bars like Lamasco's that only try to mostly play like original music and that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
I mean,
touring and local,
And I mean, cover bands serve their purpose and do certain things, you know, and can really, especially for the musicians themselves. But I mean, I think that something sorely we've missed is original music, and that's something that I really want to see, and I think is coming, you know, definitely becoming a bigger thing here.
I think there's just a lot of great talent too. I think the quality's increasing.
Yeah,
you know. Like you said, you can't go somewhere without hitting a musician, and really, you think of sometimes you go to an open mic night and it's like, you know, awful, out of tune shit or something like that. But you really, you go into town, there's an open mic every single night of the week, and you're going to hear some really great original stuff.
Yeah, at least two or three of the people.
Right? Yeah, I mean, yeah, just law of averages, you will. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's impressive, really. I guess I don't really live in every city in America. I can't see how it compares, but it just feels really good in Evansville, or at least. The region, Western Kentucky, Southern Illinois, Southwestern
Owensboro,
Indiana.
Too.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard a couple bands from Owensboro now, and what was that? Super Trash from Owensboro opened for us in the Jangle Sheep. Well, I mean, they just played first, basically. But they only had like 45 minutes anyway, so they played first at Re-Raw, actually, and that they were really good. And there's a couple other bands from Owensboro that are fucking awesome. Creep Diet, which is the drummer from... what are they? Dead Gypsies, Wait, Dead Gypsies are fucking badass. Kind of like a blues rock band. Mm. And yeah, I've talked about them on the podcast with you, Zach. But yeah, a lot of shit coming out of Owensboro. That's awesome.
I think it's very important too, because our music culture is the same as we were talking about with our food culture and everything. It's fast consumption and instant gratification.
Taylor
Swift.
That's
where you see a lot of these kind of mediocre hacks, like making millions and everything. And it's just because, and especially with just the way we consume our music, like, I mean, I listen to Spotify and everything, which,
right. Yeah.
And, or you have just mixes or just listen to songs, you know, and I think it's really important that, original bands and everything really do make, that idea makes a comeback, because it's just not where we're at, and it's something that we definitely need. I feel like our music culture in the country as a whole is just sick, you know, and it's just, I don't know.
What do you, I guess we'll start with Zach. What do you think contributed to that? The kind of the scene, quote unquote, kind of almost dying in the, I would say, toward the latter half of the 2000s.
I think it's the same, goes back to the same points, the homogenization of America, you know. We just all became this one same body with the same bland taste, just pandering to the lowest common denominator of listener. I think that's what kind of led to that. I don't think the musician spirit ever faded. I don't think people around here were like, oh, I'm sick of playing real music. I think it's just what the audience, just a reflection of the audience, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting better, though.
And how much of our faith, for lack of a better term, has been poured into like our corporations and stuff like that, churning out these kind of just the computerized type, totally invented persona of people, you know, and it's just same thing with our food and everything. You know, we just throw all of our faith behind these big companies and everything that are producing this kind of shit, and just you know, and just say, oh, well, hopefully it's good for me. Sure, this is good music. Yeah, absolutely. No, the MTV says so, or well, it used to.
Used to have music.
Like, you hear that argument, like, oh, well, Lady Gaga must be good because she sold so many albums. And it's like,
oh, my God.
How do you justify that? I mean, that just means that a majority of dumbasses like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. And then you have those people as well. It's all about perspective. It's all about your taste. And it is, to a degree.
Yeah.
But that's better. I mean, there's better stuff, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
That reminds me of Mortal Technique had this line. He said, if you go platinum, it's got nothing to do with luck. That just means that a million people are stupid as fuck. You guys know Immortal Technique? I know I've introduced you to him.
Yeah, Jesse, I like it.
You listen,
yeah.
I
don't regularly, but I have. Yeah.
Immortal Technique's great. He's good. I like a lot of that kind of independent spirit hip-hop, too. That's something that doesn't get talked about very much on this program, but... yeah, hip-hop's great, too.
Chance the Rapper. Was it Open Mic Eagle or whatever?
I'm not sure about...
Fantastic.
I haven't been keeping up that much. Kendrick Lamar's new record was fucking insane.
Yeah, I mean...
Album of the Year.
And just, like, it's the only...
Rolling Stone put it number one, which is surprising.
Several have, actually.
To me, that's the only kind of, like, hip-hop or whatever to listen to. Like, this bullshit that they have, you know? Now, like these...
Like Flo Rida.
Or whatever,
dumb,
you know?
Dumb shit that I
Hotline Bling
just can't get with.
Or whatever that song is, Don't Tell Him, you know? That Don't Tell Him. I have a personal vendetta against it. I just can't, you know? But yeah, it's just that kind of shit. But everyone listens to that and think that's what it's about, you know? But, like, really, that kind of music came from... a place
rebellion.
That was really rebellion and trying to talk about the shit and everything, and that's what some of these rappers are still trying to do. And that's, but these other guys, it's just money and just how many bitches I fuck and
got nothing
covered.
To say. Mm-hmm. Nothing to say, and they've lost the rock and roll attitude.
Right.
Exactly.
That's why I like fucking Kendrick Lamar so much, man. He made a revolutionary album, just like it's jazzy, and it was just fantastic. The instrumentals were so good.
It's
Thundercat did bass on it.
Right.
God
George
damn.
Clinton on
it's
insane.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg is on there in, like, the perfect role for Snoop Dogg to be, just kind of a smooth, you know, like, decent lyricist. Like, because Snoop Dogg has some silly lyrics sometimes. No. But in that record, they were really fucking good.
He's got the smoothest swag around. He does. Like, he's like the coolest motherfucker just listening to him.
He can say some... if he can have lyrics that if someone else were to deliver those lyrics, you'd be like, really? That's mediocre. But if Snoop Dogg delivers them, they sound fucking awesome. Somehow, he just makes it work. He's been doing it for since the 90s. I think that's part of it. But Kendrick Lamar is just, yeah, like you said, album of the year, for sure. Like, if he doesn't win the Grammy, it's, you know, he got robbed again, actually, because Macklemore won last time.
Oh, instead isn't of that just embarrassing?
I fucking hate Macklemore.
I mean, it's obvious.
It says it all music. Right there, doesn't
it's
it?
It's so obviously, and, okay, so, I'm gonna bring it, Eminem, man, he's like, yeah, it's, he has had good lyrics and stuff in the past and everything, but, like, it's just really... white America pushing this, and like, so, and this is like where, you know, these people win the Grammys or whatever, yeah, and shit, and it's just, it's,
well,
ridiculous.
Eminem, I mean, though, I think Eminem gets somewhat of a pass, more so than Macklemore for me, by a lot,
yeah,
by a,
well,
lot,
yeah,
because
sure.
Eminem was like kind of the first white boy to not be lame with his delivery and everything, mm-hmm, and he sounds white, but he's not fucking bad,
or like that type of guy. Yeah, I know what you're saying, but yeah, it seems like the white rapper or whatever is supposed to be like that party type guy or something.
Gotta knock it. So the next band's probably gonna come in here in a little bit, so we should probably wrap this up. Thank you guys
for
coming out,
thank you. I appreciate it.
And for talking to me for a little while. This has been the Tri-State Space Program. Have a good one.